And good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for spending your valuable time right here, Brighteon TV, uncensored every other Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. David Dubine, your host. Let's talk about the hottest year ever, the warmest planet ever recorded in the last 125,000 years. Really? Or is it broken temperature stations that are placed in parking lots, a lot of regurgitated information, and those trying to make careers by getting their funding saying it is warming? When we look at the headlines, they seem to be a little bit misleading. And we're talking about 8/100ths of a degree over a globe. Are they really mapping the oceans over the millions of square miles of oceans that we have? Or are they just data points somewhere that really could be not reflective of the true temperatures on the planet? This movement to more global control of taxes based on these same events, if you really think they're going to let up when they're pushing for a global control initiative for global taxing, I think we're looking in the wrong place. We'll go through it all when we come back.
In recent years, the world has only become increasingly more chaotic and uncertain. Disruptions to the supply chain have resulted in global food shortages, making it difficult for us to access the very resources we need to live in a functioning society. That's why it is now more important than ever to be prepared for the unexpected. Here at Brighteon and BrighteonStore.com, we've made it our mission to help you and your loved ones be prepared for any emergency, which is why we are dedicated to bringing you a wide selection of ultra-clean and lab-verified superfoods, supplements, preparedness items, and other health products. So support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today. Freedom of speech is a basic human right that has been hard won and granted to all law-abiding Americans. As such, we should not take our freedom of speech and expression for granted. This is more important now than ever before, since world governments and the mainstream media often try to suppress those whose opinions differ from the so-called official narrative. Here at BrighteonStore.com, we are dedicated to fighting for every American's right to speak their mind without the fear of censorship or suppression. That's why every purchase you make at BrighteonStore.com supports our pro-liberty video sharing platform, Brighteon.com, so we can keep bringing you all the latest unrestricted videos mainstream media doesn't want you to see. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today.
And thank you for joining me here for this hour, Brighteon TV Uncensored. We're going to talk about global temperatures today. Runaway, the hottest year ever on the planet. Well, supposedly in the last 125,000 years, but it's really difficult for me to believe that they understood the last interglacial when we can't even find any remains or archaeological relics from those that were alive during the last interglacial that had the same brain capacity and physiology as we do as humans. I mean, they had 10,000 years of warmth and they created nothing, and we can't find a single remnant of the last interglacial period of that society or civilization. Yet we're supposed to know the entire temperature delta and spectrum of the last 125,000 years. I wish you'd ask a couple questions about that right from that point alone. But let's get some crayons out and play with pretty colors. The greens and the blues are lost, so we're just stuck with reds and oranges. So I want to show you how they're carefully manipulating the mind of the reader. Because you have to realize today, people don't read, they skim. And the way these articles are written, the way you skim would give you the perception that we're in the hottest years ever here, or the hottest temperature ever. In the middle of summer, in the holidays, when you're having a barbecue at the hottest time of the day, in the summer with barbecues rolling, yeah, you're going to feel a little warmer. So they're going to tag on top of that, oh, it's hot, it's hot. Well, yeah, you're next to a barbecue and it's the middle of the day in the Southeast U.S. What do you expect? I digress. Let's look at the map here. What do you see? Oranges, yellows. I see yellows down in Papua New Guinea, Central Africa, and Greenland. How does that make sense to me if they're talking about similar temperatures? Well, this article made the bevy of news. It was like one of the number one articles that just got pushed from here to Kingdom Come and back. Now, I search Al Jazeera because I like the Middle East news and the different types of African news that I can find on there. But I was shocked that this was front and center there, too, so I had to pull it as an example. You thought it might run on New York Times or Washington Compost or something, but in Al Jazeera, I thought that to be noteworthy. So the article says, mapping the world's hottest temperatures. So if they're pushing world's hottest temperatures on you continuously as a news cycle for 7 straight days, oh, wait, the flag month is gone. Now we're into July. So what do you think, though? Okay, so June is flag month. What's July going to be? Oh, climate month. So what do you think August will be? Diet, don't eat month, eat insect month? Like each month of the year seems to have a segment with it. Seems to have its own narration or narrative built into the month. So heat is July. August is, eventually we'll figure it out. It'll probably be insect month at the end of this. Mapping the hottest temperatures around the world. And when you look at this, and the way they say at least 22 countries have recorded maximum temperatures of 50 Celsius or 122 Fahrenheit or above. And you read that and you go, oh my gosh, 100, no, what? There are 22 places while the planet is really getting hot. Wow. And as a skimmer of the news, you would blow right through these first highest temperatures ever recorded. See, they're telling the truth on this. But when you look deeply at the map, most people aren't going to spend the time to dig in to look at every single number. They go, 48 degrees, 55 in Tunisia. Oh, wait, that was in 1931. See how cleverly they've done this for the skimmers? They probably captured 80% of the people's, oh, it is the warmest ever, by doing this style of headline and insertion of graphics with the tiniest of fine print. 1913, North America, Death Valley was 56 degrees Celsius, 134 Fahrenheit. Oh, wait, 1913 is what I see on the map. And see, when you actually go down and read the article, instead of just with those super hot headlines and the way they've introduced it to you as over 50, over 120 degrees Fahrenheit. Currently the highest officially registered temperature, 56 degrees Celsius, Death Valley, 1913. And then they go, oh, by the way, in Africa it was 55 degrees and Tunisia in 1931. Now, how many people actually go and actually read the article through its depths? Not a lot. And this is the kind of captured journalism that we are witnessing today as an agenda to push forth. Oh, it's so hot, we got to tax the globe. Well, you know, you got to ask yourself with a straight face here. If you increase global taxes, this is not good. Will it stop? How do they stop this? If it's even possibly stoppable, which my opinion is not, it's a solar activity cycle, so you can't really stop that. And the Washington Compost, of course, following right on top of the same minutes of those same days with these articles here. 46 million people in the United States may have to be exposed to dangerous heat today. That was July 7th. And you look at it, oh, extreme caution, dangerous. And I'm thinking, dangerous. Oh, let's see the map. Here's your map of danger. Wait, this is Southeast U.S. It's hot there every single summer. They don't call it the dog days of summer for nothing. Why do you think people sitting on the front porch swinging, you know, trying to get a natural breeze, drinking iced tea? That just sprung up because, what, global warming this year? It's been like that indefinitely in the Southeast U.S., and this map makes me laugh here of how they're trying to so push the agenda. That white that you're seeing from Minneapolis over to Denver and everything, that's below normal temperatures. Yet they're trying to convince you that it's all-time record heat. But half of this country they're referencing is at a below normal temperature state. See, this is the kind of, like I say, it's misleading journalism. The way they can get away with it now is they understand that you're in a Twitter phase of attention span. That's the only possible way that these types of headlines work. As you probably skimmed it, I would have done the same thing if I was busy. Oh, 46, oh, it's going to be super hot today. Wow, there's people in danger. It's going to be da-da-da-da. And then maybe, or maybe not, I would have looked at the map. But the map was clear at the bottom of the article. So you're going to read through this much text, and then finally get to the map? Nope. You're going to read that and go, scroll. Okay, done. There's nothing else there. And move on. This is how it's done today. Once you can dissect the way the journalism is running with it. And another point, okay, to take a look at here. They're not giving you the temperatures anymore. They're giving you the real feel, the heat index forecast. First and last. So your brain associates that first. Oh, look at the heat index today. It's going to be 110 in Philadelphia. But then later on, they'll go, well, actually, it's only going to be 92. But with the humidity, it's going to feel like 110. It's a real feel. And then just before they spin out on the end of the weather forecast, they go, remember, it's going to be 110 for the heat index. So be careful outside. And your brain remembers that. It's only going to be 110 in Philadelphia today. You see how cleverly it's done. It is choreographed to the maximum across the planet in all news feeds to get you to think this way. They're morphing your mind into something that is half real, but it's not the full truth. You see how cleverly it's done. And I thought, I've seen this in Knoxville happen many a time. I remember seeing one Knoxville that was 110 degrees. And it shocked me. I was like, no way. I can't find the slide because it was just on one of these weather forecasts and I should have screen grabbed it, but I didn't because I was just watching. Didn't screen grab it, but here I found something very similar. 103 degrees in Knoxville, 102 in Oak Ridge and Lenoir City, Tellico Prairie, Spring City, 103 Fahrenheit. You're like, oh, that's a bomb. It's the real feel. And they do the same thing here with WBIR. They lead right in. Oh, it's going to be the real feel index today. And then they finally go, well, it'll be about 92. But with the heat and humidity in the Southeast U.S. like it is every single summer, it's going to feel like it's over 100. And then they'll lead out with that same thing. Oh, yeah, remember, it's going to be a real feel. It's going to be super hot, 103 plus for those of you there. You've got to keep in mind, bring lots of water. And your brain gobbles this information up and remembers it exactly like this operation is moving forward on your brain to get you to constantly believe that heat in the summer is abnormal. That's the whole thing. Heat is always here during the summer. That's why they call it the summer. It's hot. Yet they're trying to convince you because a natural cycle that occurs every year, that's hot in a hot time of the hottest time of the year, every year, is somehow abnormal because it's warm. It's hot in the summer. And see how it's cleverly done. I can't even go back to this. The psychological operation involved with this whole heat movement, especially in this month, they couldn't squeeze it in last month. Last month was a whole devotional thing for something else. This month, it's all about the heat. Maybe they'll run it into August, maybe not. But it looks like temperatures are going to start cooling immediately, and we're going to have cooler than normal temperatures heading into the fall, especially through August and September both. But here you go. Monday was the hottest day for global average temperatures on record, ever recorded, ever. And if you dig in, I went through a bevy of the articles. A lot of them are talking about 125,000-year mark. And I'm like, you guys, whoever's being paid by the UN on their payroll has absolutely not mapped out. I don't know anybody that was alive 70,000 years ago to go ahead and do the temperature measurements. Yeah, you can use tree rings. Oh, sorry. Those are kind of dated, too. You know, you can't really go far that back with dendrochronology and try to dig into the tree rings. You could probably go a couple thousand years, but you're not going 10 or 20,000 years looking at tree rings. You know, ice cores, they show something very different as well. And those on the Alpine lakes drilling down to see, well, you know, those are good for a few thousand years as well because those lakes change. They dry up, they change. So whatever kind of temperature, you know, proxy, something that's not the exact measured temperature, but other things that could determine temperature, like rainfall and acidity in soils and how much water flowed down and how much gravel was deposited in places. Yeah, you can reconstruct it to a point. But you can't tell me that 9/100ths or 8/100ths of 1 degree can be detected somewhere 70,000 years ago in sediment or ice cores. Doesn't work like that. Especially when they're trying to push everything else except the ice core data set from GISP, which is the gold standard. It's a Greenland ice core project for those of you who want to check that out. They probably have the best temperature data set on the planet, but it doesn't jive with today's measurements, so it's been shelved for those of you who would like to take a look at GISP2 ice core data set. Used to be all the rage to talk about it until it started going divergent from what was shown in the hottest temperatures ever. So you can look at it yourself, but you're going to have to dig for the information. They've shelved that one because it didn't fit the narrative. So it's supposed to be 17.1 degrees Celsius or 17.01, excuse me. 8/100ths or 9/100ths of 1 degree. And again, I don't know how they can be so precise when almost the entire planet has no temperature stations on them.
To really get a precise data set from the global temperature, you would have to have a temperature station every square mile, or even more, every half of a square mile, you'd have to have another temperature station. And that would include ocean surface as well. You'd have to have a buoy out there every, half a mile square to truly get the temperatures of the planet. There's nothing like that anywhere remotely close. They're trying to use satellites, but again, hottest temperatures, or is it reading between the lines? Because if you go to the Weather Observer's Handbook, which again was the gold standard for determining temperatures globally and with different temperature stations, you're supposed to do it over a 5-minute averaged period of time. So one or several cases, they only averaged the temperatures for 1 minute and declared it a new record of heat. But going back, they're like, you have to nullify that record because you only took a 1 minute or 1 second snapshot of that heat record and you didn't determine it over the full 5 minutes of averaging on the temperatures. So that record is null and void. So how many times have they done this and nobody's called them or caught them yet? Those that are monitoring the temperature stations. Was it a full 5 minutes of average, or was it just a snapshot to prove and get more funding? Because those that toe the line receive more funding. Those that don't, funding cut, jobs cut, tenureship cut, university positions cut. And opportunities after that into gainful employment cut as well. Once you start going down this road, you don't come back professionally. So those who are still in it are the ones who have sold themselves for 20 years to get to this point and still retain those positions. I'll say it clear and simple like that. Follow the people they're trying to censor. That's where the true information lies. You want to talk about global records? Okay, let's talk about some global records here. Anybody from Utah? 13 out of the 15 resorts had their highest all-time record snowfalls ever recorded, ever. 13 out of 15 in Utah. 900 inches of snow. And the thing was, they were still, and the lifts weren't open for skiing, but people were walking up and snowboarding down with snow that is still left 8 feet deep July 4th weekend. Go figure. You want to talk about records? Okay. 10 out of the 15 resorts had their longest ski season ever. Over 200 days of skiing. Remember, there's only 365 days in a whole year. So 200 of those days plus were full of snow where you could ski. Now 135 days, that's only 5 months. So you're telling me that snow was July, August, September, and then snows again. They're not talking snow on the ground. They're talking about ability to ski down the slopes, which requires a vast amount of snow, not just a dusting. So how much accumulation has to get on there, and how early do those snows need to start to get 200 plus days of skiing in? Talk about the records. I'm happy to do that. Was the Alta ski area 903 inches of snow? And this is the most snow. And the runoff still, by the way, for those experts that told us that California was going to be in a drought forever and we'd probably have to move our agriculture and, you know, human cause is we're causing the 1,000-year drought in California. Suddenly there's so much snowpack that every single reservoir is so full that they're letting the water out so it doesn't overtop the dams and just letting it flow in the ocean. It's coming in at that rate off the snowpack melt. Still in July. That's how much water's back. Everything is at 100% plus capacity. But those experts 2 years ago told us that we were going to have another, you know, longest, biggest drought, and people are going to have to move out of California. And these are the same people that are still getting news headline coverage. Unacceptable. Let's talk about some. Nobody talks about Greenland. Not until this week. Why not? Because you see that blue line that extended. It was gaining ice all the way through June. It's finally just started melting this week in July, a full month past the normal beginning of the melt season. And you see that straight line drop off right there in the top chart? That matches up with that X flare as it arrived to the Earth. Now, since that solar particulate has passed us, look what's happening. The ice is gaining again right here, beginning again. So you have to think that there's some solar influence in higher latitudes. If we had radio communication blackout and knockouts because of that same flare, do you think higher latitudes in the Northern Hemisphere would have had some anomalies with heat? I think they would too. Now, Greenland shows us something magnificent happening. This should be a number one headline too. Like, look how much ice is gaining back on Greenland, but it doesn't fit the narrative of the melt, so you'll never hear about it. That blue line on the bottom chart there is screaming high above the averages. So if you look at the mean averages, that gray line in the middle from 1981 to 2010, when temperatures were cooler, by the way, over the 30-year average, that's how much ice was gained, and just follow the line, and that's, it comes into the melt season and goes back out, snow starts, winter comes, it gains ice, we come into summer, it melts off, you know, and you get that, that's the curve. Well, look how much it's not curving now. If you want to talk about records, they gained 100 gigatons, gained 100 gigatons during the melt season in June. I didn't hear about that. Oh, you didn't hear about that, but I follow this. The extremes are trying to deflect you away from. The changes in the atmosphere are happening now because of the Hunga Tonga eruption and the ice crystal clouds in the mesosphere. Talking about temperatures is one thing. You can talk about that until you're blue in the face. But the reality is that bending atmospheric patterns with the jet streams and cloud cells are affecting food production globally. And just a snippet of, this is from the beginning of the month here, and we're not too far into it. Flash floods sweep Lahore, record rainfall across Pakistan. They're getting about triple the amount of rain for a year in a month. So this happened in Afghanistan also last year. From 2018, 19, 20, 21, Afghanistan and Pakistan and Iran are showing increases in rainfall. That is a cycle. Do you tell me this cradle of civilization in the Indus Valley was bone dry? Uh-uh. Land of milk and honey in Babylonia, Sumeria, what we know today as Iraq and Iran. That area, Babylonia. Gardens, the shift comes and goes through time. Do you think they could cultivate and have a vast society in a bone-dry desert? Nope. They call them cradles of civilization because conditions were so perfect with rainfall, temperature, and agriculture that a civilization could begin to bloom from those two spots, Indus Valley and Babylonia. The Sumerian areas. Oh, and historic June heat followed by record-breaking June rains, or July rains, excuse me, in Queensland, Australia. Unprecedented rainfalls. Again, Hunga Tonga eruption ejected 10% more moisture into the atmosphere. And we're starting to see it coming down in a lot of places. How about record-breaking rains and icy blasts also hit Queensland? It was such a vast event that two news headlines came out about it. Because it was such an all-encompassing, record-breaking, wow, this is an insane event, where they might still confirm to get the record cold temperatures in Indonesia north of Cape York because of this same event. Hopefully, in the next day or so, they'll be able to confirm it. Right now, it's unconfirmed. Storm Polly, atmospheric cavitation, biggest storm, strongest storm ever in the Netherlands. Knocked down 100-year-old trees, but remember in the 1600s, vast fleets were sunk by these same types of storms. 400-year difference, grand solar minimum. You know, so those trees are only 100 years old. They could withstand a 100-year storm. If there was 400 or 500-year-old trees, I'd like to see if those are still standing. They probably are. Record-breaking rainfall, western Honshu. A year's worth of rain in a month, actually within a week, same. And then if we go to the destructive derecho, 1 million acres of U.S. crops were wiped out, corn, because of sideline winds that we saw a couple years ago also, 500,000 people without power. So these are atmospheric cavitations that they don't really, you know, in the mainstream media want you to gravitate toward what's causing all the wind anomalies. They just want to keep you focused on the temperature. They can't control the jet streams and cloud cells. That's not a good sell for a global tax. Hot temperatures are. Provided they're in the correct place for the temperature stations, which we'll talk about when we come back from the break. Temperature stations are in parking lots now. Temperature stations are near outflows of air conditioning units without hot air blowing onto them. The temperature station markings where they are have given us false readings of heat islands, which have increased these temperatures. So you have to take this with a grain of salt, all these record temperatures that we're seeing. I'll dissect that when we come back after the break. Thanks for watching. David Dubine.
In today's modern world, knowing what you put in your body is crucial for maintaining optimal overall health. Many conventional health products claim to be good for you, but they may be contaminated with heavy metals, artificial chemicals, and toxins that could harm your health. Here at BrighteonStore.com, we believe your health and safety are our top priority. That's why we always go above and beyond to bring you the cleanest and highest quality nutritional supplements, superfoods, storable foods, preparedness items, and more. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today.
I'm Nicole with The Flame.
And you can find us at theflameusa.com. Make sure to go there and subscribe to the fastest growing paper to get people out of the movable middle so we can save our country.
And thank you, Brighteon, for just having us on. We so appreciate you.
Hey everybody, it's Dr. Eric Pimpudi. Hope you're having an amazing day today. I just want to give a huge shout out to all of you out there for helping us make Brighteon the fastest growing live streaming all across the globe. It's absolutely amazing because of you. You want the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. We're going to give it to you. I'm going to give it to you at 3 o'clock Central Standard Time, Monday through Friday. Tune in, check it out. All is good. See you soon. Bye.
Your own government has the power to activate a kill switch on all telecommunications, instantly shutting down all private phone calls and texts. An EMP weapon or solar flare can achieve the same result. Rolling blackouts or permanent power outages will also take out the power supply to cell tower antennas, rendering mobile devices all but useless. During these emergencies, how do you stay in touch with the important people in your life anywhere on the planet? The answer is the Bivy Stick at SAT123.com. The Bivy Stick is a two-way satellite text messaging device that uses a satellite constellation, not cell towers, to send and receive text messages. It works anywhere on planet Earth, including in war zones or blackout areas. In unpredictable times, the Bivy Stick helps you stay connected when it matters most. Visit SAT123.com to get one while they're still available.
Welcome back for the second half here. Many Ice Age Conversations, Brighteon TV Uncensored. I'm your host, David Dubine. Every other Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Before the break, talking about, are these temperatures really the all-time record temperatures that we're seeing, or is it a hodgepodge of misleading headlines that tell half-truths for the skimming audience and misplaced temperature stations? Well, we'll find out about the temperature stations as we move through the rest of the hour. But my whole area of study has been how the sun affects the jet streams, the cloud cells, the magnetism of our planet, and how in turn that will affect food production. And if you go through back through certain chapters of history, about every 400 years, you'll start to find that there's been a disruption in our world. What was causing the disruption long before any type of burning of fossil fuels, automobiles, or any types of industry or industrial manufacturing, shipping, logistics, etc.? Well, that was what I started to delve into going back, say, 400 years prior to the birth of Christ. So a good 2,500 years of data. But you can start to see these blips that stick out like a sore thumb of disruption. So forecasting it, we're into another one. My contention, along with John Casey, Valentina Zarkova, Piers Corbin, and a host of others, was that this solar cycle was going to end early. It was going to be a very short and not very strong solar cycle, that the average amount of sunspots would be below 100 on the average for the solar cycle. We were laughed at, ridiculed, and told, you don't know what you're talking about. You're not a solar physicist. You didn't go to the university and study solar physics. You did it on your own with all these other solar physicists who taught you. Okay. The solar cycle was predicted to end early by those who actually study these cycles. It was not predicted to go early or short by those who were saying, no, it's going to be the strongest ever, the longest ever. And because of that, it's going to drive heating on the planet. And we're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You just said that out of the side of your mouth. Yet in this side of the mouth, you're saying there's global warming caused by CO2. Like, what is it? It's the sun or it's CO2. You can't have both. But these are the same people being funded by United Nations and all different think tanks and that those groups inside governmental bodies here at NOAA and NASA. Speak ill and go the different direction for an explanation of why temperatures change on the planet, you lose your job. Your funding's cut. I've had many a conversation with those who have experienced that. But again, how much can you lie to yourself? Like once you get these facts and you understand how the mechanisms of solar activity affect food production on the planet, and that would be the main driver of our civilization, the food affects the economy. The food affects population migration. The food affects movement of armies to go get more resources. If that is diminished or curtailed in any way, then you can see that fingerprint all through history. And those who are saying, hey, we're back at it again, so governments might want to prepare, you know, that's not what they want to hear. They want to keep the populace distracted as long as they can. Because I kind of agree with the distraction for a moment. It might be really bad to say this, but if people really truly understood what was coming now, there would be panic on the streets long before the actual food shortages and magnetic anomalies occurred. You know, to keep a populace in check and not let them outright panic, maybe they've chosen the best course of action by not coming with the truth. Because a lot of things I see today, I'm like, maybe it was best that they didn't tell everybody. But again, I'm more on the side of truth, where I believe everybody should know the information and make their own choices. The reason I'm talking about this is let's start with the sun. And oops, all the experts got it wrong. The solar cycle is going to end sooner than they thought, meaning shorter solar cycle than was predicted. Now, whoever would have guessed that? Oh, those that predicting going into a grand solar minimum and low solar activity on a 400-year cycle, that's who. But, you know, there's contradictory information that might make people question the idea of paying global taxes into the system and reducing your lifestyle and bringing you back to serfdom. And that's what they're really afraid of, is that awareness and that whole conversation. It's very difficult to have climate scientists get on an actual debate with you, where you can rip up a bunch of stuff from the internet and say, wait, this chart here and that chart there, that's completely opposite of what you're talking about. Now you prove your point to me, because right here is what it says. And it's difficult for them to come back with rebuttals, so they just choose not to debate. Classic examples through the last several years, especially Michael Mann. And who's that? Schmidt. And I can't believe these guys are still getting airtime. Mr. Hockey Stick of there's going to be no more sea ice left after 2009, 2013, 2015, 2018, 2020, 2021. And we're still here and we still have sea ice. And yet these people still get platforms. Well, the others are going to die. We only have 96 months left. And we only have 500 days left. We only have this many days left. And we're still here. And they're still yapping on, oh, no, sorry, it's another 5 years. My bad, we just got the next, but give me the stage again. I'll be the actor or actress again. I'll say what you want to say. Give me the money. That's exactly the way it works. Those who don't get paid. So the sun's chaotic peak. What are they talking about, a chaotic peak, do you think? Oh, they're going to end it before projections or as before predicted projections suggested. That was a known for those who follow the cycles. So what does that really mean for us? Well, it's going to peak early and then it's going to slide down. And these temperatures and effects on our planet's atmosphere are going to be pronounced, especially when the magnetic field changes so quickly and rapidly. So on the left, this is a great representation here. On the left is where we sort of sit right now at solar maximum. There's a lot of, you know, magnetic activity interlooping. There's a huge amount of sunspots and, you know, solar flares coming off and hydro flares, where that's a rope that bounces off and shoots off the plasma sheet there. And then we have on the right, the cool, the calm in a solar minimum. Now what we sit and where we're going to on the right, this is a regular 11-year solar cycle image here of activity and quiet. But we're going to be going into a 400-year period of quiet, where that on the right there is going to get much dimmer. And the magnetic field will, in turn, be reflected on our planet, where the magnetic field won't be so strong, so it's not going to lock in jet streams and cloud cells. Hence the food production, the plant and the harvest day, it's going to be whack, out of whack. This is the whole thing that scares the powers that be that really don't want to terrify people that are going to, the rule of law would break down long before any of this occurs. You still have another year and a half before the biggest events of this will really be known. At that point, I'm not sure what's going to happen. The players and the actors will have just disappeared out into the woodwork, you know, and we'll be left out here going, oh, where's everybody at? So the forecast combined here, you know how it's already flattening off. They actually need to push this down on 2024. That some of the newer models actually show it trending down. 2024 is actually dropping off already. And this would be one of the shortest solar cycles ever recorded in the last 200 years. So I like to go further back in time than 40 years on the satellite record to prove a point about global temperatures, or even 150 years. So we take us back to the 1700s. In true modern minimum, they have some what they call minus one, minus two solar cycles, which takes us back in like 1640s, 1630s. They have about eight cycles going back another 100 years prior. So you get around the 1620s or 30s, basically with reconstructed. They were using telescopes and just drawing it on pieces of paper, and that was kind of in its infancy right then to understand sunspots and solar activity. But there are some records of those who, you know, did that kind of science over the last 100 years prior to the established science itself. So these are the solar cycles in intensity going back. Now, if this truly is just going to drop straight off, or, you know, mumble along here and then drop off, then we're looking at something like 1820, which is a 200-year cycle. Okay. Or something like the year 1700 to 1710. I just went up and it went back down. And there's a couple instances of this. If it truly is going to drop off so quickly, the closest one we would get is somewhere probably around 1630 or around 1710, which leads credibility and validity to we are going into a multi-century cycle here. Now, those who knew this in advance would try to give you excuses when you saw the changes, and I call that excuse global warming. And the idiocy of seeing things like this at the 4th of July coming out, you know everybody's going to barbecues, you know everybody's getting bags of ice for the coolers. And here they come out with climate-friendly cocktail recipes, go light on the ice. And I said, what? This is from Scientific American, not some random, like, you know, supermarket checkout thing that you pick off, you know, I forget what they call those kind of rags when it's just all about entertainment and thing, and it's just, oh, UFOs here and, you know, Bigfoot over there, those kind of papers. Scientific American has some, you know, credentials behind it. Ice machines run continually until they're full, potentially for several hours at a time. You're using electricity to make ice because you're using electricity, you're pumping more CO2, you're causing climate change by using a bag of ice. I kid you not, this is where they're bringing it to. But don't look at all the extremes that just destroyed a million acres of crops in America. Bent jet streams and cloud cells, compressing winds on frontal boundaries that are driven by the sun. Don't look at that. Stop using ice for your 4th of July celebrations. Are you kidding me? Right there. I'll even leave it. I hope you screen grabbed it. And then, mamma mia, up in New York, we went to a coal-fired place. I forget. It was in an old church, and it was up near Times Square. And pretty cool place. It was an old church, but they had like four different pizza ovens fired by coal, and they had all this stained glass. It was a really cool setting for a pizza joint. And they cooked. Again, with coal, they've been there for 100 years. And now New York says, you know what, anybody that's using wood or coal for firing your pizza, they got to stop it. This made all kind of headlines, massive amounts of headlines, global headlines. And then you read into it, it's only going to affect 100 restaurants. Cleverly disguised again. Like, they make it like every single pizza place is using wood, and every single anywhere you see pizza, it's causing global warming. But finally, reading way down into the article, it said a city official in New York said that under 100 restaurants in total would be impacted. But then how did this become a global news headline is the question. It just goes on and on, the push. And, you know, this whole global warming thing, too. Well, did they tell you that's been trending upward after the little ice age ended 350 years ago? So that trend of upward temperatures has been literally since the 1550s. It dropped off in the 1600s again, bringing us through the Maunder minimum, lack of solar activity, 400-year low in solar activity, which we're about to repeat right now. And as you see, the temperatures rose and have been rising since we came out of a mini ice age itself. Like, where did we get involved with this natural? Oh, you're blamed on the natural thing now. Okay, I get it. This is a great chart here, and it shows the medieval warming period, which many should do some study into. If you think these are the warmest temperatures ever, how do you think the Vikings were on Greenland and had vast colonies that where their sheep were able to graze in open fields as far as the eye could see, and now it's ice fields? Just about 1,000 years ago. You tell me. The stories are there for all to see through history. Yet they're trying to tell you that somehow they were able to colonize Greenland with vast fields of grass that don't exist now because it's too cold right now for the grass to grow. Yet 1,000 years ago, grass grew there because it was, explain that one to me. A child could understand that makes no sense. And if you look at Dr. Roy Spencer here, again, we're going to go satellite record because if you want to go satellite record and all these things, okay, I'll play. So if we look at the June temperatures, it was 0.38 or almost 0.4 of a degree Celsius above the 30-year baseline. But you notice those temperatures have been running and running along that line. And why did nobody talk about that dipping below the 30-year temperature average for the year 2020, 21, 22? Like, see, it dipped below that 30-year average line. That's why you didn't hear much about runaway temperatures. Oh, wait, El Nino's back this year. That is a natural cycle that heats specific water temperatures that in turn has an effect on the planet. They can talk to their blue in the face about global warming, whatever. But they, you know, to say that El Nino is responsible for part of that, again, well, it's a natural cycle, but it's all, you know, CO2, you got to pay global taxes. You can't have both. This is a very inconvenient chart, especially the last 3 years of La Nina that brought those global temperatures below the 30-year average. You didn't hear about much about that. Now, this is a great one. Share with your friends and family. And the whole crux of this heating thing is temperature stations, which I love. Joe Nova, go check out her site. Amazing researcher down in Australia. Jennifer Morrissey is another one down there that you might want to check out. So they went around and they did a bunch of different, analysis of where the temperature stations were located. Now, this is a good one. This is what is temperature station is supposed to be like, in a grassy area, unobstructed by trees so it can get the sunlight and you can get a temperature. I said, okay, that's a good one. And they're trying to show you where it should be. A static temperature station, and this is considered a good version of. Well, what they're starting to do now is put temperature stations where there are heat islands. Now, when you look at this, it's innocuous. And you say, oh, there's just some rocks there. It can't really affect the temperature too much until you lose FLIR, and then you start to see the radiating heat coming off. Now, what do you think it's going to do to that thermometer that's right there at the edge of the rocks and the boulders? Do you think the temperatures might be increased a little bit? Just asking for a friend. Here we go. And FLIR also. When you're looking at the temperatures in the middle of the pavement, extremely hot, but look over onto the grass. It's showing around 18 degrees Celsius, but in the center there, you're over boiling at 133. See, the difference is so vast, but it's so quick at the line where the heat dissipates or it onsets. This is another good example of where a temperature station should be, what it should look like out in a field. Perfect. This is what they all should be. This is what they all were when the temperature monitoring network began back in the 1930s. Oh, by the way, the Dust Bowl and warmer temperatures as well back then. But here's where the thermometers sit today, in the middle of parking lots, just like this. Now, do you think this temperature station right there in the middle of a parking lot in the middle of July with cars going by on a holiday weekend, chock full of travelers and traffic jam, might have a little something to do with an upward reach on a temperature? And you say, well, that's only one of them. Maybe not. It seems like the entire network has been redistributed to be pushed next to objects that, in my opinion, would increase the heat. Why would they do that? Well, if you're going to increase the heat, you could say there's global temperature rises to all-time highs. We need more tax money. We need to control you. You can have three pieces of clothing. You can only travel once a year on a jet airliner. And you, surf, need to sit back and consume less because you're heating the planet, while the elite run around in their private jets and yachts. Brick wall, concrete, overflowing, and also refrigeration unit. You know, you ever stand in front of like an air conditioner? Not inside the building, outside, where the hot air is being blown out as it cools the interior of the building? That. So do you think that temperature station where all the red arrows are pointing to, do you think it'd be warmer than normal if you stuck it in, the middle of a field or in the middle of the yard next to that building? Why did they choose to put it there? Question. Rhetorical, perhaps. But here's another one. This is in Florida. Now, the thermometer is next to exhaust, again, next to concrete and wastewater treatment tanks, which generally have an ambient temperature above or around, especially in wintertime, that water would retain heat more. You think that would maybe change temperatures, 1/10 of a degree, 2/10 of a degree, 1/2 degree warmer? Now, do this over thousands of stations, and you start to get the picture. And if you're unhappy that it's, you know, in a parking lot or next to a building, why don't we put you next to the airport? I know a lot of you like to travel. You know, when your jet takes off, well, here's a temperature station right next to where the jets are taking off. Do you think that would have? Well, they're going to taxi first. Sorry. They're going to taxi and come around there. And you think how slow jets are moving with all the exhaust blowing out of the back of those jet engines just 100 feet away from the tarmac, which, by the way, is completely asphalt itself. Surrounded by parking garages and buses and trucks and other asphalt islands, do you think that would affect the temperatures there? Thermometers. On top of the buildings, what do you think? That's a heat island. That's asphalt, street, air conditioning unit, and then your thermometers on top of a building in the middle of a heat island. This is truly the state of our temperature stations today. You think putting it next to a cell phone tower that's running with all that radiation going up and out of there and then reflective off steel bases and reflective around concrete, you think that would have anything to do with temperatures going up? This is one I took myself. I lived in Taipei and I was walking along one day. I go, no way, there's a temperature station. I did a video on this. Year 2017. I actually had to look into the video to get this image out of it again. This is a temperature station in the middle of Taipei. Huge, busy, massive street, four lanes going in each direction. What about the traffic jams when they're all stopped up and people are, you know, idling and, you know, fumes are coming out and everybody's just sitting there? You think that would change the temperatures? This is a global phenomenon. This is not just US based. And now you can start to see why maybe they have hottest year ever. But the big headlines are going to be coming in. Again, I keep saying it, watch for it. The ozone is really starting to run away right now. Now, this is a monthly comparison of June 21 on the right before the Hunga Tonga eruption, and on the left, post Hunga Tonga eruption with more ice crystals in the mesosphere where the ozone can break down. So here's what we're looking at today in July. So the July 5th, 2023, that should be somewhere around in August. So this is running at least a month ahead on depletion. So when we get into the really deep months at the end of it, the biggest ozone hole area, late September, early October, it's going to be much wider. It'll be breaking records. So this will be another thing that they can run away with. Oh, the ozone. So watch it. It's, you know, October might be ozone month. So we got flag month last month. This month we got heat month. Next month's going to be eat insect month. But somewhere around September, October, we're going to get ozone month. So they're going to dissect each month. It's just a rotating regurgitation of narratives. And the Arctic sea ice, of course, or Antarctic, excuse me, of course, it's going to melt. You got more UVB radiation coming down. What do you think UVB radiation does? Think of a microwave oven. And they're going, well, the Antarctic sea ice is melting. I wonder why. You think it's underwater volcanoes, or do you think it's an increase in UVB because of record runaway already at this point, depleting ozone? You could choose A or B or combine those two because they're both happening. And then magically I'm scratching out my, maybe then you're making ice in your ice maker. That's the reason the Antarctic ice is decreasing, because you're making ice in the Northern Hemisphere for your holiday. And you can see as confused as it is, I try to make sense of it every week. Thank you for joining. David Dubine signing off. Brighteon TV. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.